The sound of somebody retching came over the operations bay speakers. Nobody made jokes about that, either. The woman imprisoned in the wall began to convulse. Somewhere she summoned up the energy to scream, a steady, sawing shriek of mindless agony. Ripley took a step towards the nearest mic, wanting to warn the troopers of what was coming, but unable to make her throat work. It wasn't necessary. They'd studied the research discs she'd prepared for them.
"Flamethrower!"
Apone snapped.
"Move!"
Frost handed his incinerator to the sergeant, stepped aside. As Apone took possession, the woman's chest erupted in a spray of blood. From the cavity thus formed, a small, fanged skull emerged, hissing viciously. Apone's finger jerked the trigger of the flamethrower. The two other soldiers who carried similar devices imitated his action. Heat and light filled the chamber, searing the wall and obliterating the screaming horror it contained. Cocoons and their contents melted and ran like translucent taffy. A deafening screeching echoed in their ears as they worked the fire over the entire end of the room. What wasn't carbonized by the intense heat melted. The wall puddled and ran, pooling around their boots like molten plastic. But it didn't smell like plastic. It gave off a thick, organic stench. Everyone in the chamber was intent on the wall and the flamethrowers. No one saw a section of another wall twitch. Chapter 8. The alien had been lying dormant, prone in a pocket that blended in perfectly with the rest of the room. Slowly it emerged from its resting niche. Smoke from burning cocoons and other organic matter billowed roofward, reducing visibility in the chamber to near zero. Something made Hudson glance briefly at his tracker. His pupils expanded, and he whirled to shout a warning.
"Movement! I got movement!"
"Position?"
inquired Apone sharply.
"Can't lock up. It's too tight in here, and there's too many other bodies."
An edge crept into the master sergeant's voice.
"Don't tell me that. Talk to me, Hudson. Where is it?"
The comtech struggled to refine the tracker's information. That was the trouble with these field units. They were tough but imprecise.
Seems to be in front and behind."
In the operations bay of the APC, Gorman frantically adjusted gain and sharpness controls on individual monitors.
"We can't see anything back here, Apone. What's going on?"
Ripley knew what was going on, knew what was coming. She could sense it, even if they couldn't see it, like a wave rushing a black sand beach at night. She found her voice and the mic simultaneously.
"Pull your team out, Gorman. Get them out of there, now!"
The lieutenant spared her an irritated glare.
"Don't give me orders, lady. I know what I'm doing."
"Maybe, but you don't know what's being done."
Down on sea level, the walls and ceiling of the alien chamber were coming to life. Biomechanical fingers extended talons that could tear metal. Slime lubricated jaws began to flex, pistoning silently as their owners awoke. Uncertain movements were glimpsed dimly through smoke and steam by the nervous human intruders. Apone found himself starting to back up.
"Go to infrared. Look sharp, people."
Visors were snapped into place. On their smooth, transparent insides, images began to materialize. Nightmare silhouettes moving in ghostly silence through the drifting mist.
"Multiple signals,"
Hudson declared.
"All around. Closing from all directions."
Dietrich's nerves snapped, and she whirled to retreat. As she turned, something tall and immensely powerful loomed above the smoke to wrap long arms around her. Limbs like metal bars locked across her chest and contracted. The medtech screamed, and her finger tensed reflexively on the trigger of her flamethrower. A jet of flame engulfed Frost, turning him into a blindly stumbling bipedal torch. His shriek echoed through everyone's headset. A pawn pivoted, unable to see anything in the dense atmosphere and poor light, but able to hear entirely too much. The heat from the cooling exchangers on the level above distorted the imaging ability of the troopers' infrared visors. In the APC, Gorman could only stare as Frost's monitor went to black. At the same time, his bio readouts flattened, hills and valleys signifying life being replaced by grim, straight lines. On the remaining monitor screens, images and outlines bobbed and panned confusedly. Blasts of glowing napalm from the remaining operative flamethrowers combined to overload the light-sensing ability of suit cameras, flaring what images they did provide. In the midst of chaos and confusion, Vasquez and Drake found each other. High-tech Harpy nodded knowingly to New Wave Neanderthal as she slammed her sequestered magazine back in place. "Let's rock," she said curtly. Standing back to back, they opened up simultaneously with their smart guns, laying down two arcs of fire like welders sealing the skin of a spaceship. In the confined chamber, the din from the two heavy weapons was overpowering. To the operators of the smart guns, the thunder was a Bach fugue and grimoire synthesizer all rolled into one. Gorman's voice echoed in their ears, barely audible over the roar of the battle.
"Who's firing? I ordered a hold on heavy fire."
Vasquez reached up just long enough to rip away her headset, her eyes and attention riveted on the smart gun's targeting screen. Feet, hands, eyes, and body became extensions of the weapon, all dancing and spinning in unison. Thunder, lightning, smoke, and screams filled the chamber, a little slice of Armageddon on sea level. A great calmness flowed through her. Surely heaven couldn't be any better than this. Ripley flinched as another scream reverberated through the operations bay speakers. Wierzbowski's suit camera crumbled, followed by the immediate flattening of his biomonitors. Her fingers clenched, the nails digging into the palms. She liked Wierzbowski. What was she doing here anyway? Why wasn't she back home, poor and unlicensed, but safe in her little apartment, surrounded by Jones and ordinary people in common sense? Why had she voluntarily sought the company of nightmares? Out of altruism? Because she'd suspected all along what had been responsible for the break in communications between Acheron and Earth? Or because she wanted a lousy flight certificate back? Down in the depths of the processing station, frantic, panicky voices ran into one another on the single personal communications frequency. Headset components sorted scents from the babble. She recognized Hudson's above everyone else's. The Comtech's unsophisticated pragmatism shone through the breakdown in tactics.
"Let's get out of here!"
She heard Hicks yelling at someone else. The corporal sounded more frustrated than anything else.
"Not that tunnel, the other one! You sure?"
Crow's picture swung crazily as he ducked something unseen, the view provided by his suit camera a wild blur full of smoke, haze, and biomechanical silhouettes.
"Watch it! Behind you! Move, will you?"
Gorman's hands slowed. Something besides button pushing was required now, and Ripley could see from the ashen expression that had come over the lieutenant's face that he didn't have it.
"Get them out of there!"
she screamed at him.
"Do it now!"
"Shut up!" He was gulping air like a grouper, studying his readouts. Everything was unraveling. His careful plan of advance coming apart on the remaining monitors too fast for him to think it through. Too fast.
"Just shut up!"
The groan of metal being ripped apart sounded over Crow's headset pickup as his telemetry went black. Gorman stuttered something incomprehensible, trying to keep control of himself even as he was losing control of the situation.
Apon, I want you to lay down a suppressing fire with the incinerators and fall back by squads to the APC. Over.
The sergeant's distant reply was distorted by static, the roar of the flamethrowers and the rapid-fire stutter of the smart guns.
Say again! All after incinerators!
I said. Gorman repeated his instructions. It didn't matter if anyone heard them. The men and women trapped in the cocoon chamber had time only to react, not to listen. Only Apone fiddled with his headset, trying to make sense of the garbled orders. Gorman's voice was distorted beyond recognition. The headsets were designed to operate and deliver a clear signal under any conditions, including underwater, but there was something happening here that hadn't been anticipated by the communications equipment designers. Something that couldn't have been foreseen by anyone, because it hadn't been encountered before. Someone screamed behind the sergeant. Forget Gorman. He switched the headset over to straight intersuit frequency.
Dietrich! Crow! Sound off! Where's Bosky? Where are you?
Movement to his left. He whirled and came within a millimeter of blowing Hudson's head off. The Comtech's eyes were wild. He was teetering on the edge of sanity and barely recognized the sergeant. No bold assertions now. All false bravado fled. He was terrified out of his skin and made no effort to conceal the fact.
We're getting juked! We're gonna die in here!
Apone passed him a rifle magazine. The Comtech slapped it home, trying to look every which way at once.
Feel better?
Apone asked him.
Yeah, right, right!
Gratefully, the Comtech chambered a pulse rifle round.
Forget the heat exchanger!
He sensed movement, turned, and fired. The slight recoil imparted by the weapon traveled up his arm to restore a little of his lost confidence. Off to their right, Vasquez was laying down an uninterrupted field of fire, destroying everything not human that came within a meter of her, be it dead, alive, or part of the processing plant's machinery. She looked out of control. Apone knew better. If she was out of control, they'd all be dead by now. Hicks ran towards her. Pivoting smoothly, she let loose a long burst from the heavy weapon. The corporal ducked as the smart gun's barrel swung towards his face, stumbling clear as the nightmarish figure stalking him was catapulted backward by Vasquez's blast. Biomechanical fingers had been centimeters from his neck. Within the APC, Apone's monitor suddenly spun crazily and went dark. Gorman stared at it, as though by doing so he could will it back to life, along with the man it represented.
I told them to fall back.
His tone was distant, disbelieving.
They must not have heard the order.
Ripley shoved her face into his, saw the dazed, baffled expression.
They're cut off in there. Do something.
He looked up at her slowly. His lips worked, but the mumble they produced was unintelligible. He was shaking his head slightly. No help from that quarter. The lieutenant was out of it. Burke had backed up against the opposite wall as though by putting distance between himself and the images on the remaining active monitors, he could somehow remove himself from the battle that was raging in the bowels of the processing station. There was only one thing that would do the surviving soldiers any good now, and that was some kind of immediate help. Gorman wasn't going to do anything about it, and Burke couldn't. So that left Jones's favorite human. If the cat had been present and capable of taking action on Ripley's behalf, she knew what he would have done. Turned the armored personnel carrier around and driven that sucker at top speed for the landing field. Piled into the dropship, lifted back to the Sulaco, slipped into hypersleep, and gone home. Not likely anyone in colonial administration would dispute her report this time. Not with a shell-shocked Gorman and half-comatose Burke to back her up. Not with the recordings automatically stored by the APC's computer taken directly from the soldiers' suit cameras to flash in the faces of those smug, content company representatives. Get out. Go home. Get away, the voice inside her skull screamed at her. You've got the proof you came for. The colony's kaput. One survivor, the other's dead or worse than dead. Go back to Earth and come back with an army next time, not a platoon. Atmosphere flyers for air cover. Heavy weapons. Level the place if they have to, but let them do it without you. There was only one problem with that comforting line of reasoning. Leaving now would mean abandoning Vasquez and Hudson and Hicks and everyone else still alive down in sea level to the tender ministrations of the aliens. If they were lucky, they would die. If they were not, they'd end up cemented into a cocoon wall as replacement for the still-living host colonists they'd mercifully carbonized. She couldn't do that and live with it. She'd see their faces and hear their screams every time she rested her head on a pillow. If she fled, she'd be swapping the immediate nightmare for hundreds later on. A bad trade. One more time, the numbers were against her. She was terrified of what she had to do, but the anger that had been building inside her at Gorman's ineffectiveness and at the company for sending her out here with an inexperienced field officer and less than a dozen troops to save money, no doubt, helped drive her past the paralyzed lieutenant towards the APC's cockpit. The sole survivor of Hadley Colony awaited her with a solemn stare.
Newt, get in the back and put your seatbelt on.
You're going after the others, aren't you?
She paused as she was strapping herself into the driver's chair.
I have to.
There are still people alive down there and they need help.
You understand that, don't you?
The girl nodded. She understood completely. As Ripley clicked home the latches on the driver's harness, the girl raced back down the aisle. The warm glow of instruments set in the hold mode greeted Ripley as she turned to the controls. Gorman and Burke might be incapable of reaction, but no such psychological restraints inhibited the APC's movements. She started slapping switches and buttons, grateful now for the time spent during the past year operating all sorts of heavy loading and transport equipment out in Portside. The oversized turbocharged engine raced reassuringly, and the personnel carrier shook, eager to move out. The vibration from the engine was enough to shock Gorman back to the real world. He leaned back in his chair and shouted forward,
"Ripley, what are you doing?"
Easy to ignore him, more important to concentrate on the controls. She slammed the massive vehicle into gear. Drive wheels spun on damp ground as the APC lurched towards the gaping entrance to the station. Smoke was pouring out of the complex. The big armored wheels skidded slightly on the damp pavement as she wrenched the machine sideways and sent it hurtling down the wide descending rampway. The ramp accommodated the APC with room to spare. It had been designed to admit big earth movers and service vehicles. Colonial construction was typically overbuilt. Even so, the roadway was depressed by the weight of the APC's armor, but no cracks appeared in its wake as Ripley sent it racing downward. Her hands hammered the controls of the independently powered wheels as she took out some of her anger on the uncomplaining plastic. Mist and haze obscured the view provided by the external monitors. She switched to automatic navigation, and the APC kept itself from crashing into the enclosing walls, ranging lasers reading the distance between wheels and obstacles 20 times a second and reporting back to the vehicle's central computer. She maintained speed, knowing that the machine wouldn't let her crash. Gorman stopped staring at the dimly seen walls rushing by the operations bay screens, released his suit harness, and stumbled forward, bouncing off the walls as Ripley sent the APC careening wildly around tight corners.
"What are you doing? What's it look like I'm doing?"
She didn't turn to face him, absorbed in controlling the carrier. He put a hand on her shoulder.
"Turn around. That's an order."
"You can't give me orders, Gorman. I'm a civilian, remember?"
This is a military expedition under military control. As commanding officer, I'm ordering you to turn this vehicle around.
She gritted her teeth, attention focused on the forward view screens.
Go sit in a grenade, Gorman. I'm busy.
He reached down and tried to pull her out of the chair. Burke got both arms around him and pulled him off. She would have thanked the company rep, but she didn't have the time. They reached sea level, and the big wheels screamed as she sent the APC into a mad turn, simultaneously switching off the automatic navigation system and the ranging lasers. The engine revved as they rumbled forward, tearing away pipes and conduits, equipment modules, and chunks of alien encrustation. She glanced at the control console until she located the external instrumentation she wanted. Strobe beacon, siren, running lights. She wiped the entire panel with the palm of her right hand. The exterior of the APC came alive with sodium arc lights, infrared homing beacons, spinning locator flashers, and the piercing whine of the battle siren. The individual suit monitors were all back in the operations bay, but she didn't need to see them, zeroing in on the flash of weapons fire just ahead. The lights and roar came from beyond a thick wall of translucent alien resin, the material eerily distributing the light from the guns throughout its substance, giving the cocoon chamber the appearance of a dome pulsing from within. She nudged the accelerator. The APC smashed through the curving wall like an iron ingot shot from a cannon. Fragments of resin and biomechanical mortar went flying. Huge chunks were crushed beneath the armored wheels. She wrenched on the wheel and the personnel carrier pivoted neatly. The rear of the powerful machine swung around and brought down another section of alien wall. Hicks appeared out of the smoke. He was firing back the way he'd come, holding the big pulse rifle in one hand while supporting a limping Hudson with the other. Adrenaline, muscle, and determination were all that kept the two men going. Ripley looked away from the windshield and back down the APC's central aisle.
Burke, they're coming!
A faint reply as he hollered back towards the cockpit.
I'm on my way! Hang on!
The company rep stumbled to the crew access door, fumbled with the unfamiliar controls until the armored hatch cycled wide. Following in Hicks's and Hudson's footsteps, the two smart gun operators materialized out of the dense mist. They were retreating with precision, side by side, firing and covering the retreat as they fell back on the personnel carrier. As Ripley looked on, Drake's gun went empty. Automatically, he snapped the release buckles on the smart gun harness. It sloughed away like an old skin. Before it hit the ground, he'd pulled the flamethrower from his back and had brought it into play. The hollow whoosh of napalm mixed with the deep-throated chatter of Vasquez's still-operative smart gun. Hicks reached the APC, put his weapon aside, and all but threw the injured Hudson through the opening. Then he tossed his pulse rifle after the comtech and cleared the hatch in two strides. Vasquez was still firing as the corporal got both hands under her arms and heaved, pulling her in after him. At the same time, she saw a dark, towering silhouette lunge towards Drake from behind, and she changed her field of fire as Hicks was dumping her onto the APC's deck. A flash of contact lit up an inhuman, frozen grin as the smart gun shells tore apart the alien's thorax. Bright yellow body fluid sprayed in all directions. It splashed across Drake's face and chest. Smoke rose from the staggering body of the smart gun operator as the acid chewed rapidly through flesh and bone. His muscles spasmed, and his flamethrower fired as he toppled backward. Vasquez and Hicks rolled as a gout of flame slashed through the open crew door, setting portions of the APC's flammable interior ablaze. As Drake fell, Hicks charged the hatch and started to cycle the door. Moving on hands and knees, Vasquez lunged wildly at the opening. The corporal had to leave the controls to grab her. It was a struggle to keep her from plunging outside.
Drake!
She was screaming, not calm and controlled anymore.
He's down!
It took all of Hicks's superior size and strength to wrench her around to face him.
He's gone! Forget it, Vasquez! He's gone!
She stared up at him, irrational, her face streaked with soot and grime.
No! No, he's not! He's...
Hicks looked back at the APC's other occupants.
Get her away from here! We gotta get this door closed!
Hudson nodded. Together, he and Burke dragged the dazed smart gun operator away from the entry hatch. The corporal looked towards the cockpit and raised what was left of his voice.
Let's go! We're clear back here!
Going!
Ripley jammed on the controls and nailed the accelerator. The armored personnel carrier roared and shuddered as she sent it racing backwards up the ramp. A storage rack broke free, burying Hudson beneath a pile of equipment. Cursing and flailing, he threw the stuff aside, indifferent to whether it was marked emergency rations or explosives. Hicks turned his attention back to the door, fumbled with the controls. It was nearly shut when two sets of long claws suddenly appeared to slam into the metal flange like a pair of power hammers. From her seat, Newt let out a primordial child's scream. The saber tooth, the giant bear, the boogeyman was at the entrance to the cave, and this time she had no place to hide. Vasquez stumbled to her feet and joined Hicks and Burke in leaning on the door. Despite their combined efforts, the metal barrier was slowly being wrenched open from the outside. Locks and seals groaned in protest. Hicks managed to find enough wind to yell at the still-numbed Gorman,
"Get on the door!"
The lieutenant heard him and reacted. Reacted by backing away and shaking his head, his eyes wide. Hicks muttered a curse and jammed his shoulder against the latching lever. This freed one hand to pull out the sawed-off 12-gauge, just as a nightmare alien head wedged its way through the opening. Outer jaws parted to reveal the piston-like inner throat and penetrating teeth. As slime-covered fangs swung towards him, Hicks jammed the muzzle of the shotgun between the gaping demon jaws and pulled the trigger. The explosion of the ancient projectile weapon echoed through the personnel carrier as the shattered skull fell backward, fountaining acid blood. The spray immediately began to eat into the door and deck. Hicks and Vasquez fell aside, but some of the droplets struck Hudson on the arm. Smoke rose from skin as hissing flesh dissolved. The Comtech operator let out a howl and stumbled into the empty seats. Hicks and Burke slammed the hatch shut and locked it. Like a runaway comet, the APC rumbled backward up the ramp and slammed into a mass of conduit. Ripley worked on the wheels, spinning the oversized metal rims and ripping free. Sparks showered over the vehicle. In the crew quarters behind her, everyone seemed to be yelling simultaneously. Extinguishers were unbolted and brought into play on the internal fire. Newt stayed out of the way, sitting silently in her seat as panicky adults ran to and fro around her. She was breathing hard but steadily, eyes alert, watching. None of what was happening was new to her. She'd been through it all before. Something made a soft metallic thump as it landed on the roof. Gorman had retreated into a corner to the left of the aisle. He was staring blankly at his frantic companions. Consequently, he did not see the small gun hatch against which he was leaning begin to vibrate, but he felt it when the hatch cover was ripped from its seals. He started to turn, not nearly fast enough, and was snatched through the opening. There was something at the tip of the alien's tail, something silver sharp and super fast. It whipped around one leg to bury itself in the lieutenant's shoulder. He screamed. Hicks threw himself into the crew bay fire control chair and clutched the controls, jabbing contact points and switches with his other hand as the seat motor hummed and swung him around. Brightly colored telltales came to life on the board, adding no cheer to the beleaguered APC's interior, but bringing a smile to the corporal's face. In response to his actions, servo motors whirred, and a small turret came to life on the personnel carrier's roof. It spun in a half circle. The alien holding Gorman two-thirds of the way out of the vehicle turned sharply in the direction of the new sound, just as twin guns fired in its direction. The heavy shells blew it right off the top of the machine, the impact knocking it clear before the acid in its body began to spill. Burke dragged the unconscious Gorman back inside, while Vasquez hunted for something to plug the opening with. Trailing fire and smoke, the APC tore up the ramp. Ripley wrestled with the controls as the big vehicle slewed sideways, broadsiding a control room outbuilding. Office furniture and splintered sections of wall exploded in all directions, forming a wake of plastic and composite fiber behind the retreating machine. Almost clear now, almost out. Another minute or two, and if nothing broke down, they'd be free of the station's confines. Free to... An alien arm arced down right in front of her face to smash the shatterproof windshield. Glistening, slime-coated jaws lunged inside. Ripley threw up both arms to shield her face and leaned away. Once before, she'd been this close to perdition. In the shuttle, Narcissus, secure in its pilot's seat, luring another alien close so that she could blow it out the airlock. But there was no airlock here, no comforting atmosphere suit enclosing her, no tricks left to pull and no time to think of any. She tried to crush the brakes underfoot. The big wheels locked up at high speed, screeching over the sound of the chaos outside. She felt herself being thrown forward, her head flying towards those gaping jaws. But her seat harness checked her motion and kept her in the chair. No such restraints secured the alien. Leaning over the windshield, it was clinging awkwardly to the edge of the roof, and not even its inhuman strength could prevent it from being thrown forward. As soon as it landed on the ground, she threw the personnel carrier back in gear. It didn't even bump as it trundled over the skeletal body, crushing it beneath its massive weight. Acid squirted over armored wheels, but the APC's forward movement carried it clear before more than a few inconsequential pits had been eaten in the spinning discs. Their movement was not affected. Darkness ahead. Clean, welcoming darkness. Not a blank falling over her mind, but the darkness of a dimly lit world. The surface of Acheron, framed by the walls of the station. A moment later, they were through, rumbling over the connecting causeway towards the landing field. A noise like bolts dropped in a food processor was coming from the rear of the APC. Occasionally, a louder clunk could be heard. It was a sound beyond the soothing effects of lubrication, beyond repair. She fiddled with controls and tried to adjust the noise out of existence, but like her recurring nightmares, it refused early dismissal. Hicks came forward and gently but firmly eased her fingers off the accelerator control. Her face was as white as her knuckles. She blinked, glanced back up at him.
"It's okay," he assured her. "We're clear. They're all behind us. I don't think fighting out in the open suits them. Ease up. We're not going much farther in this hunk of junk anyway."
The grinding noise was overpowering as they slowed. She listened intently as she brought the big vehicle to a halt.
"Don't ask me for an analysis. I'm an operator, not a mechanic."
Hicks cocked an ear in the direction of the metallic gargling.
"Sounds like a blown transaxle. Maybe two. You're just grinding metal. Actually, I'm surprised that the underside of this baby isn't lying back on B-level somewhere. They build these things tough." "Not tough enough."
That was Burke's voice filtering up to them from somewhere in the passenger compartment.
"Nobody expected to have to face anything like these creatures, ever."
Hicks leaned towards the console and rotated an exterior viewer. The APC looked terrible on the outside. A smoking, acid-scarred hulk. It was supposed to be invulnerable. Now it was scrap. Ripley spun her seat, glanced at the empty one next to her, and then turned to stare down the aisle that led back through the personnel carrier.
"Newt! Where's Newt?"
A tug on her pants leg. Not hard, so she didn't jump. Newt was squeezed into the tiny space between the driver's seat and the APC's armored bulkhead. She was trembling and terrified, but alert. No catatonia this time. No withdrawal from reality. No reason for an extreme reaction, Ripley knew. Doubtless the girl had been witness to much worse when the aliens had overwhelmed the colony. Had she been watching the operations bay monitors when the soldiers had initially penetrated the alien cocoon chamber? Had she seen the face of the woman who had whispered in agony to Dietrich? What if the woman had been... But she couldn't have been. If that had been Newt's mother, the girl would be beyond catatonia by now. Gone, withdrawn, and unreachable, perhaps forever. You okay? Sometimes inanities had to be asked. Besides, she wanted, needed, to hear the child respond. Newt did so with a thumbs-up gesture, still employing selective silence as a defense mechanism. Ripley didn't push her to talk. Keeping quiet while everyone around her was being killed had kept her alive. I have to check on the others, she told the upturned face. Will you be all right? A nod this time, accompanied by a shy little smile that made Ripley swallow hard. She tried to conceal what she was feeling inside, because this wasn't the time or place to break down. They could do that when they were safely back aboard the Sulaco. Good. I'll be right back. If you get tired of staying under there, you can come back and join the rest of us, okay? The smile widened slightly and was followed by a more vigorous nod, but the girl stayed put. She still trusted her own instincts more than she trusted any adult. Ripley wasn't offended. She unbuckled herself and headed back down the aisle. Hudson was standing off to one side, inspecting his arm. The fact that he still had an arm showed that he'd only been lightly misted by the alien acid. He was reliving the last 20 minutes of his life, replaying every second over and over in his mind, and not believing what he saw there. She could hear him muttering to himself, I don't believe it. It didn't happen. It didn't happen, man. Burke tried to have a look at the injured Comtech's arm, more curious than sympathetic. Hudson jerked away from the company rep. I'm all right. Leave it. Burke pursed his lips, wanting to see but not willing to push. Better let somebody take a look at it. Can't tell what the side effects are. Might be toxic. Yeah? And if it is, I suppose you're going to check stores and break out an antidote in a couple of minutes, right? Dietrich's the med tech. He swallowed, and his anger faded. Was our med tech. Stinking bugs. Hicks was bending over the motionless Gorman, checking for a pulse. Ripley joined him. Anything? She asked tightly. Heartbeat slow, but steady. He's breathing the same way. It's the same with the rest of his vital signs. Slowed down, but regular. He's alive. If I didn't know better, I'd say he was sleeping, but it ain't sleep. I think he's paralyzed. Vasquez pushed both of them aside and grabbed the unconscious lieutenant by his collar. She was too furious to cry.
He's dead, is what he is.
She hauled the upper half of Gorman's body upright with one hand and drew back the other in a fist, screaming in his face.
Wake up, pendejo! Wake up! I'm gonna kill you, you useless waste!
Hicks inserted his bulk between her and the frozen lieutenant. Same soft voice employed, but with a slight edge to it now. Same hard eyes staring into the smart gun operator's face.
Hold it. Hold it. Back off, right now.
Their eyes locked. Vasquez continued to hold Gorman half off the deck. Something basic cut its way through her fury. Marine. She was a Marine, and Marines live by basics. The basics in this case were simple. A pawn was gone, and therefore Hicks was in charge.
It ain't worth bruising my knuckles, she finally muttered.
She released the lieutenant's collar, and his head bounced off the deck as she turned away, still cursing to herself. Ripley didn't doubt for an instant that if Hicks hadn't intervened, the smart gun operator would have beaten the unconscious Gorman to a pulp. With Vasquez out of the way, Ripley bent over the paralyzed officer and opened his tunic. The bloodless purple puncture wound that marred his shoulder had already sealed itself.
Looks like it stung him or something. Interesting. I didn't know they could do that.
Hey!
The excited shout made Hicks and her turn towards the operations bay. Hudson was in there. He'd been staring morosely at the biomonitors and video screens, and something had caught his eye. Now he beckoned to his remaining companions.
Look! Crow and Dietrich aren't dead, man!
He gestured at the bio readouts, swallowed uneasily.
They must be like Gorman. Their signs are real low, but they ain't dead.
His voice trailed off, along with his initial excitement. If they weren't dead, and they were like Gorman, that meant... The comtech started to shake with a mixture of anger and sorrow. He was standing on the thin edge of hysteria. They all were. It clung to them like a psychic leech, hanging on the fringes of their sanity, threatening to invade and take over the instant anyone let down his mental guard. Ripley knew what those soporific bio-readouts meant. She tried to explain, but she couldn't meet Hudson's eyes as she did so.
You can't help them. Hey, but if they're still alive...
Forget it. Right now, they're being cocooned, just like those others. Like the colonists you found in the wall when you went in there. You can't do a damn thing for them. Nobody can. That's the way it is. Just be glad you're here talking about them instead of down there with them. If Dietrich was here, she'd know she couldn't do anything to help you.
The comtech seemed to sag in on himself.
This ain't happening.
Ripley turned away from him. As she did so, her gaze met Vasquez's. It would have been easy for her to say, "I told you so," to the smart gunner. It also would have been superfluous. That one look communicated everything the two women needed to say. This time, it was Vasquez who turned away. Chapter 9. In the colony medical lab, Bishop stood hunched over an ocular probe. Beneath the lens was a stretched slice of one of the dead facehugger parasites, extracted from the specimen in the nearest stasis cylinder. Even in death, the biopsied creature looked threatening, lying on its back on the dissection table. The clutching legs looked poised to grab any face that bent too close, the powerful tail ready to propel the creature clear across the room in a single pistoning leap. The internal structure was as fascinating as the functional exterior, and Bishop was glued to the probe's eyepiece. By combining the probe's resolving power with the versatility of his own artificial eye, he was able to see a great deal that the colonists might have missed. One of the questions that particularly intrigued him, and which he was anxious to answer, involved the definite possibility of an alien parasite attempting to attach itself to a synthetic like himself. His insides were radically different from those of a purely biological human being. Would a parasite be able to detect the differences before it sprang? If not, and it attempted to utilize a synthetic as a host, what might be the probable results of such an enforced union? Would it simply drop off and go searching for another body? Or would it mindlessly insert the embryonic seed it carried into an artificial host? If so, would the embryo be able to grow? Or would it be the more surprised of the couple as it struggled to mature within a body devoid of flesh and blood? Could a robot be parasitized? Something made a noise near the doorway. Bishop looked up long enough to see the dropship crew chief roll a pallet full of equipment and supplies into the lab.
Where you want this stuff?
Over there, Bishop gestured. By the end of the bench, we'll do nicely.
Spunkmeyer began unloading the shipping pallet.
Need anything else?
Bishop waved vaguely without taking his gaze from the probe.
Right. I'll be back in the ship. Buzz me if you need anything.
Another wave. Spunkmeyer shrugged and turned to leave. Bishop was a funny sort of bird, the crew chief mused as he wheeled his hand truck down the empty corridors and back out onto the landing tarmac. Funny sort of hybrid, he thought, correcting himself and smiling at the pun. He whistled cheerfully as he snugged his collar higher up around his neck. The wind wasn't blowing too badly, but it was still chilly outside without a full environment suit. Concentrating on a tune also helped to keep his mind off the disaster that had befallen the expedition. Crow, Dietrich, Old Epone, all gone. Hard to believe, as Hudson kept mumbling over and over to himself. Hard to believe and a shame. He'd known them all. They'd flown together on a number of missions, though he couldn't say he knew any of them intimately. He shrugged, even though there was no one around to see the gesture. Death was something they were all used to, an acquaintance each of them fully expected to encounter prior to retirement. Crow and Dietrich had early appointments, that was all. Nothing to be done about it. But Hicks and the rest had made it out okay. They'd finish their studies and clean up here and be out by tomorrow. That was the plan. A little more study, make a few last recordings, and get out of there. He knew he wasn't the only one looking forward to the moment when the dropship would heave mass and head back to the good old Sulaco. His thoughts went back to Bishop again. Maybe there'd been some sort of subtle improvement in the new model synthetics, or maybe it was just Bishop himself. But he found that he rather liked the android. Everybody said that the artificial intelligence boys had been working hard to improve personality programming for years, even adding a bit of randomness to each new model as it walked off the assembly line. Sure, that was it. Bishop was an individual. You could tell him from another synthetic just by talking to him. And it didn't hurt to have one quiet, courteous companion among all the boastful loudmouths. As he rolled the hand truck to the top of the dropship's loading ramp, he slipped. Catching his balance, he bent to examine the damp spot. Since there was no depression in which rainwater could pool up, he thought he must have busted a container of Bishop's precious preserving fluid. But there was no tickling, lingering odor of formaldehyde. The shiny stuff clinging to the metal ramp looked more like a thick slime or gel. He shrugged and straightened. He couldn't remember busting a bottle containing anything like that, and as long as nobody asked him about it, there was no point in worrying. No time for worrying, either. Too much to do so they could get ready to leave. The wind beat at him. Lousy atmosphere. And yet it was a lot milder than what it had been before the atmosphere processors had started work here. Unbreathable, the pre-sleep briefing had said. Pulling the hand truck in behind him, he hit the switch to retract the ramp and close the door. Vasquez was pacing the length of the APC. Inactivity in what was still a combat situation was a foreign sensation to her. She wanted a gun in her hands and something to shoot at. She knew the situation called for careful analysis, and it frustrated her because she wasn't the analytical type. Her methods were direct, final, and didn't involve any talk. But she was smart enough to realize that this wasn't your standard operation anymore. Standard operating procedure had been chewed up and spit out by the enemy. Knowing this failed to calm her, however. She wanted to kill something. Occasionally, her fingers would flex as though they were still gripping the controls of her smart gun. Watching her would have made Ripley nervous if she wasn't already as tense as it was possible to be without snapping like an overwound mainspring of an ancient timepiece. It got to the point where Vasquez knew she could say something or start tearing her hair out.
All right,
We can't blow them up. We can't go down there as a squad. We can't even go back down in the APC because they'll take us apart like a can full of peas. Why not roll some canisters of CN-20 down there? Nerve gas the whole nest. We got enough on the dropship to make the whole colony uninhabitable.
Hudson was pleading with his eyes, glancing at each of them in turn.
Look, man, let's just bug out and call it even, okay?
He glanced at the woman standing next to him.
I'm with Ripley. Let them make the whole colony into a playpen if they want to, but we get out now and come back with a warship.
Vasquez stared at him out of slitted eyes.
Getting queasy, Hudson?
Queasy?
He straightened a little in reaction to the implicit challenge.
We're in over our heads here. Nobody said we'd run into anything like this. I'll be the first one to volunteer to come back, but when I do, I want the right kind of equipment to deal with the problem. This ain't like mob control, Vasquez. You try kicking some butts here, and they'll eat your leg right off.
Ripley looked at the smart gun operator.
The nerve gas won't work, anyway. How do we know if it'll affect their biochemistry? Maybe they'll just snort the stuff. The way these things are built, nerve gas might just give them a pleasant high. I blew one of them out of an airlock with an emergency grapple stuck in his gut, and all it did was slow it down. I had to fry it with my ship's engines.
She leaned back against the wall.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit and the whole high plateau where we originally found the ship that brought them here. It's the only way to be sure.
Now, hold on a second.
Having been silent during the ongoing discussion, Burke abruptly came to life.
I'm not authorizing that kind of action. That's about as extreme as you can get.
You don't think the situation's extreme?
Growled Hudson. He toyed with a bandage on his acid-scarred arm and glared hard at the company representative.
Of course it's extreme.
Then why won't you authorize the use of nukes?
Ripley pressed him.
You lose the colony and one processing station, but you still got 95% of your terraforming capability unimpaired and operational on the rest of the planet. So why the hesitation?
Sensing the challenge in her tone, the company rep backpedaled flawlessly into a conciliatory mode.
Well, I mean, I know this is an emotional moment. I'm as upset as anybody else. But that doesn't mean we have to resort to snap judgments. We have to move cautiously here. Let's think before we throw out the baby with the bathwater.
The baby's dead, Burke, in case you haven't noticed.
Ripley refused to be swayed.
All I'm saying, he argued, is that it's time to look at the whole situation, if you know what I mean.
She crossed her arms over her chest.
No, Burke, what do you mean?
He thought fast.
First of all, this installation has a substantial monetary value attached to it. We're talking about an entire colony set up here. Never mind the replacement cost. The investment in transportation alone is enormous, and the process of terraforming Acheron is just starting to show some real progress. It's true that the other atmosphere processing stations function automatically, but they still require regular maintenance and supervision. Without the means to house and service an appropriate staff locally, that would mean keeping several transports in orbit as floating hotels for the necessary personnel. That involves an ongoing cost you can't begin to imagine.
They can bill me, she told him unsmilingly. I got a tab running. What else?
For another thing, this is clearly an important species we're dealing with here. We can't just arbitrarily exterminate those who found their way to this world. The loss to science would be incalculable. We might never encounter them again.
Yeah, and that'd be just too bad.
She uncrossed her arms.
Aren't you forgetting something, Burke? You told me that if we encountered a hostile life form here, we'd take care of it and forget the scientific concerns. That's why I never liked dealing with administrators. You guys all have selective memories.
It just isn't the way to handle things, he protested. Forget it.
Yeah, forget it.
Vasquez echoed Ripley's sentiments as well as her words.
Watch us. Maybe you haven't been keeping up on current events, Hudson put in, but we just got fragged, pal.
Look, Burke. Clearly, Ripley was not pleased. We had an agreement.
I think I've proved my case, made my point, whatever you want to call it.
We came here for confirmation of my story and to find out what caused the break in communications between Acheron and Earth. You got your confirmation, the company's got its explanation, and I've got my vindication. Now it's time to get away from here.
I know.
He put an arm over her shoulders, careful not to make it look as if he were being familiar, and turned her away from the others as he lowered his voice.
But we're dealing with changing scenarios here. You have to be ready to put aside the first reaction that comes to mind. Put aside your natural emotions and know how to take advantage. We've survived here. Now we've got to be ready to survive back on Earth.
What are you getting at, Burke? Either he didn't notice the chill in her eyes, or else he chose not to react to it.
What I'm trying to say is that this thing is major, Ripley. I mean, really major. We've never encountered anything like these creatures before, and we might never have the chance to do so again. Their strength and their resourcefulness is unbelievable. You don't just annihilate something like that, not with the kind of potential they imply. You back off until you learn how to handle them, sure, but you don't just blow them away.
Want to bet?
You're not thinking rationally. Now, I understand what you're going through. Don't think that I don't. But you've got to put all that aside and look at the larger picture. What's done is done. We can't help the colonists. And we can't do anything for Crow and Epone and the others, but we can help ourselves. We can learn about these things and make use of them, turn them to our advantage, master them.
You don't master something like these aliens. You get out of their way, and if the opportunity presents itself, you blow them to atoms. Don't talk to me about surviving back on Earth.
He took a deep breath.
Come on, Ripley. These aliens are special in ways we haven't begun to understand. Uniqueness is one thing the cosmos is stingy with. They need to be studied, carefully and under the right conditions, so that we can learn from them. All that went wrong here was that the colonists started studying them without the proper equipment. They didn't know what to expect. We do.
Do we? Look what happened to Epone and the rest. They didn't know what they were up against, and they went in a little overconfident. They got caught in a tight spot.
That's a mistake we won't make again.
You can bet on that. What happened here is tragic, sure, but it won't be repeated. When we come back, we'll be properly equipped.
That acid can't eat through everything. We'll take a sample back somehow, have it analyzed in company labs. They'll develop a defense, a shield, and we'll figure out a way to immobilize the mature form so it can be manipulated and used. Sure, the aliens are strong, but they're not omnipotent. They're tough, but they're not invulnerable. They can be killed by hand weapons as small as pulse rifles and flamethrowers. That's one thing this expedition has proved. You proved it yourself,
he added in a tone of admiration she didn't believe for an instant.
I'm telling you, Ripley, this is an opportunity few people are given. We can't blow it on an emotional spur-of-the-moment decision.
I didn't think you were the type to throw away the chance of a lifetime for something as abstract as a little revenge.
It doesn't have anything to do with revenge, she told him evenly. It has to do with survival. Ours. You're still not hearing me.
He dropped his voice to a whisper.
See, since you're the representative of the company that discovered this species, your percentage of the eventual profits to be derived from the study and concomitant exploitation of them will naturally be some serious money.
The fact that the company once prosecuted you and then had the decision of the prosecuting board overturned doesn't enter into it. Everybody knows that you're the sole survivor of the crew that first encountered these creatures. The law requires that you receive an appropriate royalty. You're going to be richer than you dreamed possible, Ripley.
She stared silently at him for a long time, as though she were observing an entirely new species of alien just encountered. A particularly loathsome variety at that.
You son of a... He backed off, his expression hardening.
The false sense of camaraderie he tried to promote was sloughed off like a mask.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
Don't make me pull rank, Ripley. What rank? We've been through all this before.
She nodded down the aisle.
I believe Corporal Hicks has authority here.
Burke started to laugh at her. Then he saw that she was serious.
You're kidding. What is this, a joke? Corporal Hicks? Since when was a corporal in charge of anything except his own boots?
This operation is under military jurisdiction, she reminded him quietly. That's the way the Sulaco's dispatch orders read. Maybe you didn't bother to read them.
I did.
That's the way the colonial administration worded it. You and I, Burke, we're just observers. We're just along for the ride. Hey, Pone's dead, and Gorman might as well be. Hicks is next in the chain of command. She peered past the stunned company rep.
Right?
Hicks's reply was matter-of-fact.
Looks that way.
Burke's careful corporate self-control was beginning to slip.
Look, this is a multi-million credit operation. He can't make that kind of decision. Corporals don't authorize nukes. He's just a grunt.
Second thoughts and a hasty glance in the soldier's direction prompted Burke to add a polite, no offense.
None taken.
Hicks's response was cool and correct. He spoke to his headset pickup.
Farrell, you been copying all of this?
Standing by came the dropship pilot's reply over the speakers.
Prepare for dust-off. We're going to need an immediate evac.
Figured as much from what we heard over here. Tough.
You don't know the half of it.
Hicks's expression was unchanged as he regarded the tight-lipped Burke.
You're right about one thing. You can't make a decision like this on the spur of the moment.
Burke relaxed slightly.
That's more like it. So what are we going to do?
Think it over, like you said we should.
The corporal closed his eyes for about 5 seconds.
Okay, I've thought it over. What I think is that we'll take off and nuke the site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
He winked. The color drained from the company rep's face. He took an angry step in Hicks's direction before realizing that what he was thinking of doing bore no relation to reality. Instead, he had to settle for expressing his outrage verbally.
This is absurd! You seriously can't be thinking of dropping a nuclear device on the colony site.
Just a little one, Hicks assured him calmly, but big enough.
He put his hands together, smiled, and pushed them apart.
Whoosh.
I'm telling you for the last time that you don't have the authority to do something like...
His tirade was interrupted by a loud clack, the sound of a pulse rifle being activated. Vasquez cradled the powerful weapon beneath her right arm. It wasn't pointed in Burke's direction, but then it wasn't exactly aimed away from him either. Her expression was blank. He knew it wouldn't change if she decided to put a pulse shell through his chest either. End of discussion. He sat down heavily in one of the empty seats that lined the wall.
You're all crazy, he muttered. You know that.
Man,
Vasquez told him softly,
why else would anyone join the Colonial Marines?
She glanced over at the corporal.
Tell me something, Hicks. Does that mean I can plead insanity for shooting this mierda? If I can, I might as well shoot that sorry excuse for a lieutenant while I'm at it. Don't want to waste a good defense.
Nobody's shooting anybody,
the corporal informed her firmly.
We're getting out of here.
Ripley met his eyes, nodded once, then turned and sat down. She put a reassuring arm around the only conscious non-participant in the discussion. Newt leaned against her shoulder.
We're going home, honey, she told the girl.